Just try and put yourself in the mind of the person who you are trying to target when it comes to SEO.
You're listening to the Keep Optimizing Podcast to increase your traffic, improve your conversion rates, and grow your profits.
Hello and welcome. I'm Chloe Thomas, the host of this e-commerce marketing focused podcast. If you're not familiar with our format, well, each month we focus on a different marketing method. It could be email or SEO or Facebook ads. And each week I interview a different expert to explore the latest advice on making it work for you. And this very episode is number 200. Yes, we have made it to 200 episodes all about e-commerce marketing. It's kind of amazing to think back when I had the idea for this. We're still going 200 episodes later, but we're not doing anything particularly different to celebrate it. We thought we'd carry on bringing you great interviews about key topics on the area of e-commerce marketing at hand. But what we do have in this episode is two guests. We've got a client and we've got a supplier side. So you've got a retailer in this one. And we are talking about probably the biggest thing in SEO at the moment, the biggest thing you can do. It's a big project. It's a complicated project, but it can reap huge rewards. So that is what we're going to be talking about in this episode. We are getting deep into technical SEO and talking about a project that our guests have done in late 2023 on a big fashion site in the UK, the Moss site, the suit company formerly known as Moss Bros. We are talking about how they did a back-end upgrade. They stayed on Remarkable Commerce, but they did a big rebuild of everything that happened behind the scenes on the website. And you're going to hear about all the benefits that gave them, why SEO was front and foremost of all of those things that they were doing, and then how they went about measuring success. And as you'll hear at the beginning, both guests have huge experience in SEO. So there's loads of great tips coming out of this interview too. So enjoy this one. It's not going to add a little to your to-do list. It's going to add a big thing to your to-do list, but it's well worth a lesson. So enjoy episode 200. And make sure you listen right to the end so you don't miss any of my guests' advice and my own take on the whole thing. Remarkable Commerce is the UK's most flexible and configurable e-commerce platform, designed specifically for D2C retailers who want to grow their sales quickly. They're trusted by leading retailers like Moss, Ben Sherman, and Roman. Remarkable's key differences are full freedom of your front-end design and full control of which composable modules you wish to use. Very excitingly, they've just released this year's Digital Retail Index, a performance audit of nearly 800 UK retailers, ranking them by key technical metrics. To find out where you're ranked or submit your own site for analysis, go to keepopt.com/remarkable. That's REMARKABLE. So keepopt.com/remarkable for the Digital Retail Index. In this episode, I'm chatting with SEO experts Brad Holdsworth and Matt Henton. Brad is Sales and Strategy Director at Remarkable Commerce, home of the UK's most customizable e-commerce platform, and Matt is one of Brad's happy clients, head of e-commerce at fashion retailer Moss. Hello, Brad.
Hello, Chloe. How are you?
I'm good. Hello, Matt.
Hi, Chloe.
Great to have you both here. Thank you so much for this. Very cool to have like both sides of the coin on this one as well, the head of e-commerce and the supplier side expert. So awesome to have you here. Before we get into our topic, I'd love to know how you both found your way into SEO. So Brad, let's come to you first. How did you end up in the world of SEO?
I started by doing SEO for local businesses, which I think is probably quite common. In the marketing world. And I did that for like events companies and hospitality companies. And that's kind of how I got into doing marketing generally. It was like, we need more people at this event. So therefore, let's do some SEO and some PPC. So I did that. And then I joined an agency and I started doing the client side stuff. And that was offering a marketing service to clients like Moss and others. And I did that for a few years and I built up my own team of marketing consultants. Team of 10 people, and we were doing loads of kind of different channels, not just SEO. And then I went client side for a little bit, which was dead interesting. I'm sure we'll talk about that in a bit. Did that for like a year. And then I kind of stepped away a little bit more from the hands-on SEO stuff. And I kind of nowadays do more strategic work and marketing work generally on the business. But yeah, that's how I started though.
But and with that core SEO story going throughout, but from lots of different perspectives. Cool. Looking forward.
Got a deep love for it, definitely.
Excellent. Excellent. That's what we want for our guests on SEO month, is that they love the SEO. Oh, maybe one day we should do an episode of people who hate SEO for SEO month.
Oh yeah, be good.
It would definitely be ranty.
A lot of shouting.
Matt, how did you end up in SEO and e-commerce?
So yeah, I started my career back in the 1990s working for an ISP selling consumer and business hosting and access services, and didn't really understand anything about SEO. I don't think anybody really understood anything about SEO at that time. And I'm talking about a time when AltaVista and Lycos were the sort of search engines of choice. And I remember some of our business customers asking us at the time, you know, what's this all about? How do we get to feature more prominently than our competitor? And quite frankly, we didn't have a clue and really just put it aside and said, well, look, that's not our problem. We'll provide you with access and hosting and you need to figure out the rest. And there weren't really any agencies around at that time to support either. It just wasn't an area of focus or skill or any real understanding of how it worked. And then, of course, Google came along and ate their lunch and really kind of provided us with the dominant search engine. And that really started the emergence of SEO. And I found myself working for the consumer part of that ISP in the early 2000s. And that was the time of the big switch to broadband for consumers. And I really then started to take an interest in it because, you know, I wanted to understand, you know, how certain providers were ranking better than we were for terms like, you know, best ISP and best broadband and, you know, great ADSL provider and those sorts of terms. And so that's where I really got hooked and I guess went on that journey of being conditioned by Google to, you know, provide experiences and content that would help us to get that visibility. And so, yeah, I've seen it all the way through from there, really.
Yeah. So listeners, some amazing SEO experience here in the episode today. And I think what you were just touching on there, Matt, is so true of what we're going to be talking about today, which is conditioned by Google. We've all been conditioned by Google as consumers and as businesses. But I find the longer I have an eye on SEO, the more almost pleased I get with the developments Google makes with how it does search, because so frequently they are combined with what creates great user experience. So the work you do for SEO improves the business anyway. A lot of the time.
I couldn't agree more. If you look at, you know, why did Google become the dominant search engine? You know, it's because they provided better search results. It's pretty simple stuff. And they rewarded with extra, you know, visibility, those brands, those sites and those pages that answered the questions that people were answering or asking the best. So it did condition us, but it conditioned us to create a better internet and better results for people to be able to find. And that continued not just with the content itself, of course, but with, you know, the transition into experience, site speed, mobile optimization, and so on. We were incentivized to do the right thing for the consumer by Google almost at every single step. And that shaped the look of the internet that we have today.
Definitely. And is exactly what we're here to talk about. Brad, why is this technical side of SEO so important to get right for an e-commerce brand in 2024?
I think it's the foundation, really, of a site's technical ability, SEO ability even. I think doing that technical foundation allows you to then focus on the content, focus on the on-page stuff, to focus on the brand, to focus on the wider optimization strategy that feeds into other channels as well. So I think having a technical first mindset enables you to think, okay, my site is competitive from that, as a foundation, then let's move on from it. And often if you don't have that mindset, and if you don't think of technical first, you think of it latter. Unfortunately, when you start to push out content in different formats, or when you start to think about brand, for example, unfortunately, if you've not got your technical configuration right, it means that you're always hamstrung, essentially, because of that. So in my opinion, focusing on technical is the first step towards SEO success.
Got you. Now, I'm sure we'll get into this a little later on, because you've both been involved in Matt's big project, tail end of 2023, to upgrade the back end, I suppose, of the website in order to improve all of this. But before we get kind of into that meaty technical SEO project, Are there any quick wins in technical SEO these days, or is it all fundamental, foundational elements that we need to look at?
I mean, I think there are quick wins. The problem with quick wins is that they can quite often end up layering complexity. And I think what Brad was hinting at in terms of getting that bedrock of technology right and that sort of almost architectural planning right is that you avoid that layer of complexity upon layer that can, yeah, really kind of make things difficult to maintain and difficult to improve further down the line. But, you know, that doesn't mean unless you tear up your platform and start all over again, then you can't make improvements. Of course not. There's always lots that can be done. I guess it's just understanding where the point is at which you need to say, you know what, we need to kind of start things over again in this particular area rather than trying to put on quick fixes.
Yeah, I think you're completely right. The quick wins are probably not on the technical side. I think they're more on the on-page work. So doing a crawl and looking at what pages are missing from a content gaps point of view. Have I got pages that don't have a meta description? You know, do I have pages that have got the same on-page title? So they're conflicting and confusing. Do I have pages that have got the same product in them and essentially are the same thing, but we're trying to position them in a different way, but they're not different enough. They're not unique enough. Those are all quick wins that you could, you know, implement within minutes, hours, that would probably have a knock-on positively within a day, a week or so. The whole kind of SEO takes 6 months thing that I'm sure many of us can remember is not really a thing anymore. You know, there are quick wins that you can do, but I guess most retailers are already doing those things. And it's really what are the hidden stuff, the normally technical or wider brand activity that kind of differentiate you.
So there's, in the technical sense, and the including improving site speed and all that, there's some sticking plaster gaffer tape options we could take, but we've got to be aware that those quick wins are held together with sticky back plastic and string, and we're probably heading towards a bit of a more thorough improvement if we want to get those big improvements. And Brother, you mentioned something which I found quite fascinating. I've been looking at your digital retail index report, where you've taken the top retailers in the UK to see how well they're doing basically on this technical side of things. There is a winner, you know, there's a person at position one, but there's not a lot score-wise. There's not a lot of points between almost the top 100 people. So it strikes me that this is a good technical SEO. Is kind of, it's not quite table stakes, but it's not, you can't do something and you'll suddenly massively beat your competition. It's kind of, we're all fighting to be at the front of the grid type thing. Does that, have I explained that at all usefully?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, our retail, digital retail index, it uses Google's Lighthouse audit. Essentially, that's like it's an open source report. We inserted like 800 sites into it and said, go and look at these 800 sites, Google, and tell us what our five main scores are. So it looks at things like what your performance score is. So that's like more from a technical perspective, what those technical elements are looking like. The next audit is like an accessibility audit, which is thinking about usability and UX. And then there's another audit on best practice, another audit on SEO, and then another audit on PWA. And essentially, the retail index takes those five audits and calculates a score and then ranks the 800 retailers by that score. And what we found was that the retail index essentially did not give us the results that we expected. Because you'd expect, you know, let's put Amazon number one. Let's put, you know, these huge players in the top 20. When in fact, it's actually not that. It's looking at retailers that have really, really strong trading. Therefore, their on-page content is amazing. It's looking at, they have a really strong SEO team, which means that their SEO is on point. Technically, they've got a rapid site. Accessibility has been thought about. It's where all these points have been hit. It's more of a holistic kind of review rather than just they've got some metadata or they're missing a site map. So yeah, our retail index is really comprehensive in terms of what it looks at and certainly doesn't give just your SEO is good, therefore you're number one.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, everyone who's intrigued by both of those things, we'll make sure there's a link to the Lighthouse and we'll make sure there's a link to the latest version of the Digital Retail Index report in the show notes for you. So you can go and browse those to your heart's content and chuck websites in your competitors and everything else into Lighthouse yourself this afternoon or whenever you finish listening to this episode. But we said we'd talk about the big project that you've just done. Matt, what led you to decide to do a platform upgrade that didn't really affect what the customers saw? Because that's not something that's on, I would imagine, is on everybody's to-do list at the moment. So what led you to decide to undertake that project last year?
Yeah, it was a big project and not one that we came to lightly. As you say, the basic front-end experience that we deliver to our customers didn't change. We're constantly updating the site designs, and we're, you know, A/B testing new approaches to product pages and checkout and so on. But this was a fundamental platform upgrade. And to what I was saying earlier about layering on sort of complexity, I think we'd got to a point where we were struggling to make those marginal gains in, you know, site speed, responsiveness and so on, just because we had got, you know, bits of code fixing something that we'd introduced a few years ago, and then something else had to be introduced to work around that. And we just sort of got to that point of making it really hard for ourselves to progress. Remarkable's core platform had moved on, and so we took the decision to go through that project. And we really made the case for that, for the investment in doing that, based on the gains that we were likely to see in site speed and stability and responsiveness, which thankfully we have seen. And yeah, didn't really change the front end site very much at all, but it really put us in a much stronger position, not just in terms of the better site performance, but our ability to develop, you know, new functionality onto the platform and integrate to other partners in a smoother way and lots of other benefits like that.
So there's been plenty of team benefits alongside the kind of, I guess, removing the barrier to SEO improvement that you'd reached.
Yeah, lots of improvements in our own kind of workflows in terms of, you know, bringing products onto site, merchandising, category pages and all of those sorts of things that do take up, you know, e-commerce team time that we've been able to do more quickly, more effectively. And as I say, working with other partners as well, being able to integrate new functionality more quickly, more easily, and just the whole thing being more stable, because we haven't got that layer upon layer of complexity and old fixes for things that we introduced, you know, many years ago.
It's a good point about the layering effect, because what often happens when retailers grow is that they almost forget what they've done for many years, and it becomes this unpicking strategy where it's like, okay, this is a piece of logic that's in place that does a certain thing in the back end or on the front end, and then you have to try and work out, okay, is it needed? How does it work? How is it affected by these other pieces of logic that we've wrote many years ago? And you kind of create this over time, you create this really complex beast of an engine that when you try and then look at improvements, it's hard to do because you have to unpick, you know, layers and layers of it. So what I guess the Moss migration upgrade project allowed us to do is actually look at from the ground up, what are we trying to achieve? So that was improvements in site speed, small bits of UX capabilities that weren't possible previously that now are, and how essentially does the architecture look? Because we want to do stuff from a functionality point of view, and the Moss team were challenging us with things that what they wanted to do that were becoming harder and harder because this beast of an engine, if you want to think of it like that, was just becoming so big. So it really needed us to kind of take a step back and say, right, how do we re-architect this from the ground up? What do these APIs look like and how fast are they? And from a platform perspective, what are the big sticking points from a data usability point of view, for example? It was no mean feat, Matt, was it?
No, it was a big project. But like you say, Brad, I think some of the things that it did start to unlock, you know, we were, as an example of something that we were using lots of front-end caching to try and maintain site speed and deliver pages quickly. But that made it very difficult for us to personalize pages and show different users different versions of pages because we were caching so much on the front end. By, yeah, stripping away, moving everything onto this new platform, we were able to break that down and say, well, look, we can now deliver server-side different site experiences to different users in a personalized way, in a way that we just couldn't do previously because we were trying to keep site speed as good as possible.
Got you. Love that example. I want to drill into the SEO side of this for the rest of our chat on it. Before we go into some other clever things you've done on the SEO side of that upgrading, obviously there were a lot of benefits from the whole project around team time, future proofing, UX capability, and that kind of stuff. On the SEO front, though, were there any key stats you were measuring around the site speed to benchmark has this actually worked or not? Brad?
Yeah, we were really careful in the metrics we chose from a tracking perspective, because what we wanted to ensure was what we were doing from a development point of view was going to have the impact we wanted it to have. And therefore, you had to ensure that the metrics we were tracking were the right ones. So we were looking at things like largest contentful paint and first contentful paint. And those are metrics essentially looking at when a user loads a page, how fast content loads to begin with and how fast they see it, but then also what the biggest piece of content is on that page and how fast that takes to load. And then after that, it's almost like once the page is loaded, is it fully complete or does it then have a moment where it updates again, almost like a flicker effect? Very common in terms of like modern functionality, you'll see pages start to load and then they kind of jump into there once everything's loaded in after the fact. There were elements like that that we were trying to improve on that we did. And we improved both those metrics as well as a generalized speed metric across the board that we were able to pull out of GA and other tools as well.
I think that's such a key point to bring in there is that, and for anyone who doesn't know what those metrics are, go and have a look at Lighthouse that we mentioned earlier, because that's where you'll find them. And I think it's so key that you were looking at metrics, the exact same metrics that Google's judging you on. This wasn't some other metric from somewhere else. It's that's the metric we want to move. Let's measure on that metric, not on another. I want to get into some practical bits and other bits and pieces that you did in the build. So we mentioned the caching changes. Are there one or two others you're willing to mention? Because obviously we don't want to share too many trade secrets here. But there are one or two other elements that were really key to that upgrade process, or that alternatively you'd recommend the audience to be working on to improve their technical SEO. Matt, do you want to go first?
You know, one of the metrics that we were focused on actually was interaction to next paint. So that measure of responsiveness within a page. And that's really important because, you know, so much of what our users are able to experience, particularly on product pages, does not require a new page load. It's all loaded within that original page load, but you are interacting with different elements that, you know, concertina open and closed around size guides and fit guides and product descriptions and information about the model and so on. All of that really vital information, which is closed up in various ways within the page. You know, we didn't just want to focus on loading the page quickly. The page itself then had to be super responsive and fast and feel app-like for the user. And that was a real focus for us, because we do have a lot of content on our product pages, in particular at Moss, because obviously we're known for suiting, you know, a typical three-piece suit, three different items on the product page, lots of information there, lots of information about sizing. And so we're cramming a lot into that product page. And so we wanted to make sure that that was all really quickly accessible to the user from within the page.
Yeah, so you're not just getting them in fast, you're keeping that experience fast to create the long-term great experience. Brad, your final, I guess, top tip on this one?
Well, I'll take a technical perspective on it, because that's what we came into this project with, the kind of priority being. So the first one was around the syncing of processes. And what we were seeing previously was when the teams at Moss were loading new product, creating new categories, creating new promotions, doing some merchandising, for example, there was a numerous syncs that were happening behind the scenes that happened first before and then before the customer was seeing them. We had to re-architect a lot of those sync processes in order, firstly, for the teams to be able to do their job quicker, but for the customer to then be able to see those changes quicker as well. So it was trying to tighten that time frame down between action and a consequence. So there were things like migrating over to Elasticsearch as a database type, for example, introducing a new framework of code, which allowed us to then re-architect the data structure. We looked at things like Redis caching and more modern frameworks in terms of the front-end styling. All of these things collectively allowed us to then speed up that process from action to change being through. And throughout all of that, there was also a thread of reliability, because another thing that we really wanted to focus on was making sure that we were future-proofing ourselves so that the platform and the front end were able to grow significantly for many years to come without there needing to be some type of massive upgrade again. And also be able to handle things like instant surges in traffic if that happened, or multiple use cases of promotions being stacked on top of each other. And all these kind of potential challenges that could come, we're making sure that from a reliability point of view, we're ready for all of them. So it was thinking all of those things ahead of time, and that's what formed the project plan, really.
Love that rundown. Okay, I know we've given all of you listening an awful lot to think about there, and I'm sure this is the type of project that may well be different for all of you, depending on what systems, what platforms you are, but I hope we've given you loads to think about doing a full technical upgrade of your SEO. Thank you, Brad and Matt, for all your advice there. It's been brilliant picking your brains about it all. Listeners, stay tuned. Stay tuned, because if you don't, you're going to miss out on Brad and Matt's insider tips on SEO and my suggestions for more ways we can help you improve things even further in your business. Remarkable Commerce is the UK's most flexible and configurable e-commerce platform, designed specifically for D2C retailers who want to grow their sales quickly. They're trusted by leading retailers like Moss, Ben Sherman, and Roman. Remarkable's key differences are full freedom of your front-end design and full control of which composable modules you wish to use. Very excitingly, they've just released this year's Digital Retail Index, a performance audit of nearly 800 UK retailers, ranking them by key technical metrics. To find out where you're ranked or submit your own site for analysis, go to keepopt.com/remarkable. That's REMARKABLE. So keepopt.com/remarkable for the Digital Retail Index. Okay, Brad and Matt, so far we've gone deep into technical SEO and site speed. Now you get to wow us with your insider knowledge about the whole of SEO. So for the following questions, your answer can be anything to do with SEO, which of course does include all those things we've already been talking about. Brad, Matt, are you ready for these?
Let's do it.
All good.
Okay, let's start with newbie advice. If we've inspired someone to take their first step, what do they need to know to give themselves the best chance of success? And Matt, I believe you're going to give us the answer to this one.
Yeah, look, there's just so much great information about SEO available online. I think Moz's SEO glossary is a great place to start if you find yourself baffled by all the acronyms and terms that are being bandied around. But yeah, SEO Moz generally, search engine land. I think look, if you just Google 10 people to follow in SEO, you'll find some great people that you can follow that'll be either tweeting or putting on LinkedIn just daily information that's really good. You just got to immerse yourself in that and not be kind of overawed by all of the terms and all of the knowledge that you think other people have. It just does take a little bit of time to absorb that world, and suddenly you find yourself being the expert in the room.
It is a complex world, isn't it? But it's also a crazily helpful world too. So I totally agree with those resources you've just mentioned there, Matt. Thank you. Now, once you've started, of course, you've got to keep optimizing. So what's your favorite way to improve performance? And Matt, I think we're coming to you for this one as well.
Yeah, the only thing I could say here is to just try and put yourself in the mind of the person who you are trying to target when it comes to SEO. You know, how might that person that you really want to get through to your site be searching? What is it that they're looking for that you're relevant to, that the question that you can answer? And we've obviously been talking a lot about Google, but it's not all about Google, of course. There are plenty of other places that people search for things, and you know, even more so now with ChatGPT and the whole world of AI. But very early on in my career, I was working for a retailer. We were selling spare parts for home appliances. You know, we created some videos that show people how to fix their own appliances, and we put them onto YouTube, not really thinking that we would get an awfully big response from them. And suddenly we were racking up millions of views from, you know, how to fix your oven or washing machine. And it really became clear to us there that for those kind of searches, for the customers that we had, YouTube was actually a stronger search destination than Google itself was, because it's just a natural response when you're thinking about fixing something is, how do I fix it? Not where do I buy the thing that I need to fix it? And that was a real lesson for me in sort of just trying to think about how people and where people will be searching for the things that you want to put your brand in front of them for.
Such a great example. And yeah, we all can get a little bit overly Google blinkered, can't we? So thank you so much for that, Matt. If someone listening wants to learn more, is there one cheap or free resource you'd recommend? And Brad, we're coming to you for this answer.
Yeah, my recommendation from a cheap perspective would be, and I'm going to do technical again, is to download the free version of Screaming Frog, which is like a crawl tool and just get your head around how it works, what it's telling you, and it'll identify a handful of things, but essentially that'll give you the basics of what to optimize on. And from an SEO perspective, it's free, it's good. You can get a paid version as well, but I think that just unlocks like more crawls. So the free one's cool.
God, I love that. An active recommendation for our learning resource. And finally, Brad, crystal ball time. What's coming up in the next 6 to 12 months that we should be getting ready for?
I mean, I'll elaborate firstly on Matt's point around Google not being as important perhaps as we all think in the SEO land. And I think when you look at TikTok, when you look at Instagram, converting your content into a format ready for those channels is actually an SEO strategy, because the amount of brands I've found on TikTok that I've then gone and bought from, because I've gone and actively searched for a certain product type or I've got a certain problem or a certain outfit that I'm maybe trying to design in my head, and I go and search for it. But I'll do that on TikTok. I won't do that on Google. But I'm still doing a search. I'm still discovering a brand. I'm still going through and buying it. I do that on TikTok. I do it on Instagram. So to do that from a brand perspective, you just need to ensure that your content is good and you're, I guess, marrying your product into those channels as well. So a customer can find your product, even if they're seeing your content, you need to be able to still find your product. So I think that's just become bigger and bigger over the next 12 months. I mean, the elephant in the room, though, is AI, isn't it? Because the battle for and against it, I think, is going to become more of a war. In my perspective, it's the whole OpenAI landscape is about to absolutely explode in the next 6 to 12 months. I see the benefits being time saving and efficiency, being able to research topics faster, unlock trends, upcoming trends that are going to be happening. The whole content creation stuff is another side, which I think there'll start to be some innovation in. And I think you'll start to see like genuine authored content kind of icons or unique content icons or something. There needs to be some like differentiator between created with AI versus created by me sat in my bedroom. I think that's coming, but probably a little bit further down the line. But AI is just going to become more used over the next 6 months for sure.
Yeah. These days, I've reached the point where I'm always amused with a piece of content I'm involved in. If we make it to the end without mentioning AI or not, are we going to manage it? Are we not going to manage it? Should we? Shouldn't we? And I think you're quite right. I think it's having such an impact on both the creation of search and how search functions. I am fascinated for in 5 years' time, we look back and see where it's had the biggest impact in our industry, because I wouldn't want to be putting money on anything at the moment. Who knows? Who knows? But before we go off on a theoretical debate about where AI may or may not have the biggest impact, I want to say a huge thank you to both of you, Brad and Matt. And I'm sure the audience are going to have questions for you and would love to get in contact. So we'd love to know where they can find you. So websites, LinkedIn addresses, those kind of things would be great. Matt, I'll come to you first. How can people get in touch if they'd like to find out more about you and Moss?
Well, you can find Moss at moss.co.uk. But if you want to get in touch with me, then just search for Matt Henton on LinkedIn.
Simple as that. Thank you very much. And Brad, where can they find more about you and Remarkable Commerce?
Yeah, LinkedIn, the same. So it's Brad Holdsworth, you'll find me, or remarkablecommerce.com. Again, we do lots of events, lots of content, chat to lots of people. So yeah, come and join the party.
And make sure when you go to the Remarkable Commerce website that you get yourselves a copy of the report we were talking about earlier. Find out how everyone else is stacking up in the industry in the UK. That's the Digital Retail Index report. Well worth a download. It is fascinating reading. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being on the podcast and sharing so much with our audience. It's been great chatting to you, and I know the audience will love this episode too. So thank you so much.
Cheers, Chloe.
Thanks, Chloe.
So big old project and a lot of things we were just discussing there. I think for me, they really made the case for if you're reaching that point where technically on your website, you're butting your head against things. You know, you try and implement something and it knocks over five other things, or you want to do something new and it's going to cost you a small fortune because you've built such a complicated back-end system. It really makes the case for doing a back-end rebuild of your site that takes into account those juicy SEO, technical SEO gains you can get by properly speeding things up rather than sticking plastering it all. But that also then delivers in terms of future cost savings, future hosting flexibility. Brad was talking about how they future-proofed it for sudden spikes in traffic, integrations, personalization, saving the team time by making things easy to do. It's not a quick project, but it's a project which clearly you could tell how pleased Matt was by how it's all gone. it's going to deliver time and time and time again for you. So well worth looking at. And obviously, always important to keep an eye on what metrics you should be using and what metrics you're going to judge that project by. Really love the fact, whilst they were looking at a general site speed on GA4 metric, the primary metrics were the ones that come from Lighthouse, those lovely paintful ones. Which best thing to do if you want to understand those, go and take a look at Lighthouse. And we've added links to Lighthouse so you can go and see what Google thinks of your site, and also to where you can grab yourself a copy of the report, the index that Remarkable Commerce have put together, looking at all those, which are the best e-commerce sites in the UK for hitting those numbers. Really, really fascinating reading. Highly recommend going and downloading a copy. Highly recommend going and having a look at your own site at Lighthouse and seeing what improvements you could make. So fascinating one there. Not much in the way of quick wins, but some a big project that could make and pay huge dividends to you if you're able to get that done this year. You can get the links to all those things we discussed, the full transcript of the episode, important notes and more at keepoptimizing.com, or use our special direct episode short links. Just put keepopt.com/ the number of this episode into the URL bar and you'll be redirected straight to the right episode page. And when you get to the website, do go and add yourself to our email list so you don't miss out on any of the other things I share to help you improve your business. Thank you so much for tuning in to this, the 200th episode of the Keep Optimizing podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, then do check out all our other SEO episodes. If you scroll up the feed, you'll find more on technical SEO. You will find more on content and other improvements. And our last episode, episode 199, the one just before this one, is all about YouTube SEO, which Matt was talking about there too. You can find all those SEO episodes by scrolling up your feed, look for things with the word SEO at the beginning of the title, or use the short link keepopt.com/SEO to go to the page of the website that's got all our SEO content listed for you. Finally, please do tell your fellow marketers about the Keep Optimizing podcast, because we've helped so many people in the first 200 episodes. I'd love to help so many more for the next 200. So please do tell them about it so we can help all of you to improve your e-commerce marketing. Have a great week and make sure you listen to the next episode so I can help you all to keep optimizing your marketing.
Access everything Keep Optimizing at keepoptimizing.com. That's with an S, not a Z.
Get your copy of Remarkable's latest digital retail index now, a performance audit of nearly 800 UK retailers, ranking them by key technical metrics. Find out your ranking or submit your site for analysis at keepopt.com/remarkable. That's REMARKABLE. So keepopt.com/remarkable for the digital retail index.